Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Jamie and Tony, and we're here to talk about all things media. We're here to talk about comic books and Netflix shows and apps today, in addition to a particular book that I enjoyed. But we're going to start off with Jamie today. Jamie, what are you here to talk about?
I'm here to talk about Paper Girls Volume 1, which is a collection of the first five issues of the Paper Girls comic series, which is by Brian K. Vaughan, who is well known for his Saga comic series, which I think, Tony, did you talk about that?
I talked about Private Eye, but I like Saga.
Okay.
Yeah, Saga's amazing. Absolutely.
So this is relatively newer. This came out in March, Volume 1, and Volume 2 is coming out at the end of this month. And before Stranger Things, I might have had a difficult time pinning out what the mood of this comic is. But after Stranger Things, I can say it is like Stranger Things in the fact that it's about four 12-year-old girls growing up in 1988. And it has the suburban lifestyle. It has kind of the adolescent angst you have from being, you know, 12 and having difficulties with your parents and your neighborhood bullies and things like that, while also having supernatural elements of it. Mm. So there's aliens. And what I really liked about it is that these four girls are very much girls. They're 12. They're not sexualized women. They're not the token woman out of every superhero series. Mm-hmm. It is about the girls, and it very much would pass the Bechdel test because they do not care about boys at all. Mm-hmm. The only boys they care about are the ones that are trying to beat them up in their neighborhood, and they're planning their revenge on them. So this is about these feisty, rebellious, weapon-toting young girls. It starts on the night after Halloween, and they're just biking around their neighborhood, delivering their papers, which is where the title comes from. They all deliver the newspapers in their mm-hmm. community. And all of a sudden, they find some mysterious things. People in their neighborhood go missing. They can't find their families. They find some secret spaceship-like thing in someone's basement. Then all of a sudden, there's these creatures that are kind of like dinosaurs in the sky and warring clans of different alien-like races. Mm-hmm. So while I thought this volume was amazing, one of the things that was difficult for me was there's so much at once. It's very thick on plot and less so on characters. And of course, we've only had five issues so far, so mm-hmm. that might be fleshed out as we go along. But I couldn't really tell any of the four girls apart that much. They each had slightly different backstories. One has an alcoholic stepmother. One is a little nerdier, things like that. But it was difficult to distinguish the girls in any, I think, meaningful way. And also all the mysterious supernatural things kind of get lobbed on you at once. And that's how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to, I think, throw everything at you at once. And then you with the girls are kind of unfolding it and trying to figure it out. It's like a mystery unfolding. But just given this one volume, I was like, I'm a little confused about what's happening. However, I did love it. They're 12 years old, and it's rated T, and the creator was saying he's made it for, you know, 12-year-olds for kids. But I would say probably if I was recommending this to people, I would be wary of recommending it to a 12-year-old. There's a lot of F-bombs in it. There's smoking. There's drinking. There's things that some parents might be a little bit concerned about having, you know, a fifth or sixth grader reading, whereas I would say older teens would definitely get into it because it does capture so nicely this kind of Stand By Me or It feeling of suburban claustrophobia, mm-hmm. I think.
You mentioned Stranger Things. Does it delve into the nostalgia aspect of like the genre of 80s movie tropes and things like that? I mean, at all?
I think less so than Stranger Things, where the homages to like Spielberg and the music mm-hmm. and things like that were very front and center. Where here, 1988 is kind of more of a backdrop. Mm-hmm. You know, you do see scenes in their bedrooms and they do have posters that are of the time and their clothing and things like that. And one of the characters says a homophobic slur that she does get called out on, but it's one of those things that we remember that, oh, you know, teens in that time mm-hmm. did speak differently, unfortunately, than might be seen as okay now. Mm-hmm. But the nostalgia factor is there, but it's definitely not as huge.
Yeah. What does the art evoke? Is it, because the cover is bright, bold colors. Is
yes.
the book all like that?
Yes, oh, it is. Goodness. So the cover is, you see the four girls kind of looming and they're bright turquoise and there's a pink background. And the art is really strong on pinks and purples and blues. Mm. So if you can picture a Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper that, you know, people had in junior high, mm-hmm. that's kind of the imagery we have here, is that it's very bright, not neon, but very vibrant. And the art is definitely more similar to what I would think of as, you know, traditional comics versus some of the other more independent graphic novels we see, like graphic memoir and things like that, mm-hmm. especially when it gets more supernatural. I thought the art and the text worked together really well. We have beautiful double-page spreads mm-hmm. that show aliens and these winged creatures across the sky, and it's really visually interesting. The artist who did this is Cliff Chang, I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, but he was the artist who did Wonder Woman, so that's what he's mostly known for. But I loved the colors because, like I said, mm-hmm. it's like Lisa Frank. It's really bright, and it really evoked that time period well, I think.
Cool.
My other little question is just about the way Brian K. Vaughan tends to build his own mythologies. Like in Saga, he seems to put in so much also. I mean, there's like a maybe a duality and a good background, but he never explains like 90% of any of it. Mm-hmm. Would you say that some of these monsters, flying dinosaurs and aliens, I guess you already said they're kind of like thrown at you. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a hint that they are going to explore into it more? I mean, that's kind of the main...
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we're getting hints as it unfolds, and it made me very excited to read the next volume, which comes out in a couple weeks.
Awesome.
So I think for someone who's not necessarily used to reading comics of this type, it was an interesting crossover where I would expect that from something that's a different type of like superhero comics, but in some ways, this is more similar to other types of graphic novels, you know, if it's coming of age or things like that, where I was expecting one thing and it was a different thing, which is not bad. It was just a different genre. So it's an interesting genre bender. And I think it's a good way to pull people who aren't necessarily interested in comics into it, because it has a really accessible storyline. And I think it would be empowering for young girls who are usually only seeing themselves in characters in skin-tight latex. Mm-hmm. You know, and things like that. It's, oh, there's girls that are my age. So I would recommend it to older teens and adults. It definitely is appealing to older people as well.
Cool. So that's Paper Girls, Volume 1. We have it here at Des Plaines Public Library if you're looking to check it out.
We also have it on Hoopla. So it's available on HooplaDigital.com through the library's portal. And the way Hoopla has set it up, it's actually really easy to read comic books, and we have a big comic selection there, and that's how I read this one. So
excellent. All right, we'll move on to me next. I read a book, a nonfiction book called 10% Happier by Dan Harris. Dan Harris, you may or may not know, is a news anchor. He did the weekend edition of Good Morning America for a while. He's not super popular, but he's on TV often. And he wrote this book about a crisis he had where he actually had a anxiety attack on the air in the middle of reading the news and how his life kind of changed as a result of that. So it's a little bit of a self-help book because it's all about meditation and the power of meditation and how it affected his life. But he actually lays down a lot of groundwork about his life, about how he started out as a wartime correspondent right after 9/11. So he was always overseas. He was always in the thick of things. And then he kind of, when he came back, he kind of chased that high of always being high in adrenaline with drugs. And so he would have weekend-long benders, and he got himself addicted to several, you know, serious drugs. He started to have a problem, and that's when the anxiety attack came. And he realized that he needs help dealing with this problem, of whether it's PTSD. He was never exactly clear. But among the other things that he did, you know, he spoke to a psychiatrist and he started medication, but he also tried meditation. And he found it very helpful and very difficult and very fascinating. He didn't want to try it for a long time because in this book, he has a lot of preconceptions about meditation and about people who advocate for it. And he explores those thoughts and eventually always realizes, oh, I'm wrong. There's more to this person. They're a better person than I thought. And his prejudices really hold him back. So what he finds is meditation is like exercise. You know, if you do 5 minutes of meditation, it's like doing 50 reps of bicep curls, something like that. And your mind gets stronger and you're able to focus better, deal with anxiety better, and all these great things. And so he calls the book 10% Happier because he feels that's how it affects his life.
Yeah.
He's about 10% happier than he was before he started meditation, in addition to all these other things. So it's kind of a fascinating story because he talks about he read A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle and he had some questions. Mm-hmm. So he just invites him on the show and asks him, well, I have these questions about this book that you wrote. Could you tell me this? Could you tell me that? And it's really quite marvelous. He talks to Deepak Chopra after that. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of thrilled living vicariously through this guy who could just, whenever he has a question, he can just pluck the person out of their daily lives. Because he's a TV journalist, mm-hmm. and he's like, mm-hmm. don't you want to be on TV for 5 minutes? And they're like, absolutely I do. I'll come mm-hmm. to an interview. So that's kind of a thrill for me to read about the kind of power that he has in learning. Like, he can go straight to the source, mm-hmm. and he can learn about this. And he's real clear in his book with what he feels is helpful, what he feels is not, and other people may feel differently. But I think it's kind of thrilling to have someone just cut through a lot of the notions that people have about meditation, mm-hmm. the fears that they have, the uncertainties that there are, and just get to, I found this helpful, I found this not helpful, I found this person interesting, I found this person not interesting. And it's kind of a fascinating book because so much of it is memoir and so little of mm-hmm. it is meditation. He does describe in very strict detail, he went on a 10-day meditation retreat where you're not allowed to talk for 10 days and you meditate for an hour before breakfast, 2 hours after breakfast, then you have lunch and then you have a walking meditation, things like that. And he described it as like the most difficult experience of his life. And he also gained the greatest high of his life,
huh.
which is something to say because earlier in the book, he was talking about weekend long benders on cocaine.
Yeah.
And now he's talking about meditating in California as the greatest high he's ever achieved. So it's quite fascinating. And it's really to the point. He's an excellent writer because he's a newscaster. Mm-hmm. He writes for a living. He's written all his life. So the fact that, you know, he's writing a nonfiction book is really comes quite easily to him. It seems to me that his writing style is just ready to go for here's no nonsense, here's the facts. And I myself, I used to be a meditator. I kind of let it go. So I've read this book to kind of get me back into it. And it's really done a good job of kind of recharging my motivation mm-hmm. for the practice.
That's really fascinating to me. I come from someone who is very skeptical of meditation, not because of I don't believe in its benefits, but just personally, I've tried so many times and my mind just goes flits into different spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, does he give practical kind of, you said it's partially a self-help book. Mm-hmm. Does he talk about different types of meditation and does he go through like what you have to actually do?
He does,
okay.
But in very limited detail because he just does mindfulness meditation, which is focusing on your breathing,
mm-hmm.
and he gives a one-page set of instructions, and that is it.
Okay.
That is all he does. He doesn't talk about guided meditation.
Okay.
He doesn't talk about transcendental meditation, none of that. He's just focused on the mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, though, he'll talk about his difficulties doing it, and it's kind of encouraging for him to talk about, yeah, this was difficult, that was difficult. You know, when he goes to the retreat and he's miserable, he struggles, it's kind of nice for me to hear that, oh, yes, this is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, it is very difficult. And, mm-hmm. you know, going for an hour at least or 10 hours in a day would be awful.
Mm-hmm.
And he describes it as awful for most of his trip. Then there was like a swell in the middle where he was loving it and felt great. Then he came back mm-hmm. down and was struggling again. And so just the idea that the practice can be both things. It can be awful. It can be miserable. It can be upsetting. Or it can be beautiful and encouraging and delightful, kind of one day to the next,
mm-hmm.
was really compelling for me.
That's great. I'm going to have to take a look at that book. I don't have much comment other than it just sounds really interesting. And it sounds like the kind of genre I like to read, so I'm going to take a look at it soon.
It's a good book. It's a fast read. We have two copies here at the library. I just returned one, so both of them should be there. It's also on My Medium All. If you're an ebook reader here at Des Plaines Public Library, you can get a hold of it that way. But yeah, I recommend it half for just the fun of his writing and his life experiences and just his candor, I think, is the word I'm looking
mm-hmm.
for.
Uh-huh.
If he doesn't like the metaphysical descriptions, he just throws them out. It's, I don't need this. This isn't what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for the rigid practice that I've gotten a benefit out of.
That sounds fascinating, especially because many books in that genre tend to be more metaphysical or deeply spiritual, where it does seem, at least ones I've looked at, seem like oh, it's only positives, where it would make me feel like, oh, I'm not doing anything correctly.
Right.
So to get something that's very fact-based and, mm-hmm. you know, showing the highs and lows would be interesting.
And towards the end of the book, he gets into a whole chapter on the health benefits that have been found through medical studies about how it can help with high blood pressure. It can help with PTSD. You know, the Marines are practicing meditation because they think it'll make a better soldier. So he gets into that towards the end, and it's pretty compelling when he lays it out, as a newsman would. Here are all the effects that have been found to be positive for this practice. But I have tried it. It is difficult, no doubt. I have done it in the past. I should start doing it again. But this book was a lot of fun to read. At the very least, it was a lot of fun to read. And if you're into meditation or not, or if you're just interested in Dan Harris's writing style, I still recommend it because it was a fun time. It was probably one of the fastest I've gone through a book in a long time because I could not put it down. So that's 10% Happier by Dan Harris. We've got it on my Medium Mall, like I said. We've got it on the shelf as well. And then we'll move on to Tony. Tony, what do you got to talk about?
Yeah, so along with meditation, I wanted to review a few apps I've been trying lately. They're apps to form habits or to make to-do lists or to work up the courage to work at your goals and things like that. So I'm actually reviewing three of them today. One of them is called Habitica. One of them is called Life RPG, and one of them is called Super Better. And the thing that all three of them have in common is they're all kind of gamification or gamified apps. Mm-hmm. So they reward you for different milestones and achievements and things like that. So Habitica is one I just recently found. It is kind of the most tricked out and fun looking one in that it's got like 8-bit characters, so like stylized avatar that you can change the hair color and change how they look slightly, and then you get all sorts of gear from doing daily to-do lists and things like that. So your reward system is kind of just digital. You're just kind of, you can trick out your guy to look however you want. Mm-hmm. And it has kind of just these first two, Habitica and Life RPG, they're very pared down to-do lists when you think about it. So Habitica works nicely because it's just a simple three types of to-do lists. One of them is to-do. One of them is your dailies or, you know, daily goals or whatever. And then one of them is just whether you're working on a habit. So like habit, you can say, oh, I did this correctly or I did it incorrectly. So like meditation could be one of your habits or one of your daily goals. Mm-hmm. It's just very customizable. So it's really up to the individual how they want to do it. But it has a lot of social interactions, and you can even form like groups and parties and things like that. I haven't gotten into any of that stuff because I've only had this app for about a week or two. The other ones I'm a little bit more familiar with. But right now it's looking like Habitica is going to be the one I'm just like going to embrace for the next chunk of time. I mean, I have all sorts of different types of to-do lists, but this one is like the daily reminders that like I want to be constantly working towards like one or two goals. And it's just having an app that might like beep or ring in the morning that reminds you, oh, this is the thing you're supposed to be working on, is always useful to me at least. Yeah, I don't know. Habitica is nice, flashy, colorful. Well, there's a really good community online. It's worth giving it a try. I mean, it has its downsides in that I didn't really know what the point of putting externalizing my goals in here was until like I got to like level 3 or 4 and then like dragon egg dropped and like different weird random things dropped. And I'm like, okay, this kind of makes sense now. It feels kind of like almost like a Facebook game from like way back in the early days of Facebook when I actually played those games, you know, but like a very simple game where this dragon egg might evolve into a dragon that I can use to decorate my avatar with or whatever. Mm-hmm. So your character gets stats, your character levels up, your character takes damage if you don't complete dailies. Mm-hmm. So far, it hasn't been necessarily greatly motivating, but I think it's going to get there with the whole like random drops and things like that happening, because I'm not really playing any RPGs, video games, or otherwise right now. So it's just kind of nice to have like this thing that's kind of with me as I go through my daily tasks, daily rituals, whatever. So Life RPG is very similar to that, except you create your own rewards. You don't get like an avatar or anything to like decorate with your awards. I think it was great because it gave me like a sense of gratification when there was a tough thing I needed to do, like a deadline, and there was a difficult task. I could put it in there, and then when I achieved it, I could set on a scale of like 1 to 100 how difficult this task was. And if I thought, oh, this is the hardest thing in the world, I'd like put the slider all the way to the top, and then you get like 3 levels from it. So that was like, that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is all arbitrary, these levels.
Right.
But for some reason, you know, hearing a soundbite or whatever, just it did help in those few cases where it's like, oh, I really do have to do that thing. To be honest, I don't like try out and evaluate that many apps nowadays. So this was like a nice break from kind of all my other organization type of apps to try something new. And it served as like kind of a fun thing. So Life RPG, You got to customize like just the icons of the tasks. So it was very much more minimal and pared down. But maybe for that reason, I liked it. Everything was stored locally on it. It wasn't like in the cloud or anything. Okay. So it felt a little bit more like I was just taking notes on my one device. And then finally, okay, so the last app is kind of different than the other two. It's based on the book that I reviewed for the podcast, actually, Super Better. Mm-hmm. What it does is it actually takes a lot of that science behind it and translates each of your achievements and goals in this app to one of four, or a combination of one of these four resilience milestones. So like social resilience, emotional resilience, physical resilience, or mental resilience. Mm-hmm. And so like emotional resilience might be like, I realize I'm anxious about this thing, so I'm going to think about it and realize that, no, I actually want the outcome of this task. So like if I was nervous today about coming and talking about the podcast, I'd be like, wait a second, no, I actually wanted to do the podcast, and it's a positive thing. You know, mm-hmm. like knowing that it's coming up, but being like, oh, I'm actually looking forward to that in some way. So you're kind of just reframing it. Mm-hmm. And then you use that, you push a button on the app and it's like a power up. So it plays a ding or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it says, oh, you've increased your resilience in this. And then you can see over time, like how many times you've used that one power up.
Okay.
So it's useful in a sense that you're actually learning different aspects of how your mind works in that way. And it's kind of just like a psychology lesson. Mm-hmm. Like while you're consistently using this, you're like, oh, I should, you know, this is like a way to interact with my own feelings that will translate into like a real life result. So very interesting. I think Super Better is a very cool app. It's definitely flawed with bugs and it doesn't really track things very well. And there are some things even within it that like, oh, read this article on positive psychology. And then you click on it and nothing happens. You have to Google it. You have to leave the app and Google it. And it's like, I wish the app was just a little bit better, but overall, it's like I've been enjoying more and more apps that actually just have good information that pique your curiosity, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good model for other apps to take on. But yeah, that's the three of them. This is like information gleaned over time. I didn't do them all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think my mind would be a little bit, my organization would be a little bit all over the place. Sure. But you guys have any questions about
I guess experience? I was wondering if I was looking for an app just to replace a simple to-do list, like the Todoist app or something, do you feel like any of those would be able to replace that if my tasks were, you know, just straight things that I had to do at work, for example, not necessarily habits or things like that?
Yeah, I think Habitica is probably the best one for just a straight to-do list because it does just have a column for to-do. Mm-hmm. You can do habits and you can do dailies. It seems like you can just completely base it off of your to-do list. And I even saw exploring their website that they have a way that you can even like use it in an organization or in a classroom setting. And assign tasks to people or, you know, assign yourself different tasks. But Life RPG is exactly the same. You can set yourself deadlines. Mm-hmm. You can set a task to be recurring too. So if you wanted to do it every day, I think both of those are good just to-do list apps.
I think I've used Life RPG, the web app version of that, a long time ago. And I found it very compelling for about 6 days. And then I kind of let it go.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, do you find any of these are sticking better than the others?
I'd say it's weird because I had Super Better a long time ago and I like got rid of it. But that one's just like a nice one to just have on the phone. And then like if I feel like, oh, I have like 5 minutes, I can consult it and see if there's something that applies to what I'm doing right now. Because again, it's just learning about your own psychology. It's kind of just being self-reflective. But I can see Habitica sticking around. For Life RPG, I feel like I was trying to be super critical of my habits for a period, and it was really good to see, like, what habits am I really doing? Mm. Like, if you're doing a crash diet that takes a certain period of time, it was really good because it was, like, there's very concrete things you have to do, like meal prep and things like that every day. So I have a hard time saying, like, they will stick around because I think with technology, like, I'm just always fickle with my relationship with technology. So it's here today, but then, yeah, in a month or two, it'll probably be... It might be a thing of the past. But then it's kind of interesting. I also consider it like an old journal when you pick it up and you realize, oh, these were the things that were important to me three, 4 weeks, 5 months ago or something like that. And hopefully they're not too different
than today. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I find that I usually find the process of finding a specific app for things, like a to-do app, more stressful. And then I usually just don't end up downloading any of them or using them because I always get caught in like, which will be better for me? And then I'll download five of them. And then I put my information in each of the different five and it becomes overwhelming. Yeah. But those seem pretty interesting. I'll check them out.
Okay, so what are those apps again, Tony?
So it's Habitica, Life RPG, and Super Better.
Very good. And those are Android and iOS?
Android and iOS. Okay, yeah, and some of them are available on the web as well.
All right. And then for our group discussion, we're going to talk about Luke Cage, a show on Netflix, which you may have seen by now. It's been out for a few weeks, maybe close to a month. It is another one of the Marvel shows that Netflix has been doing so well with, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. Luke Cage is the third one. And Luke Cage himself was in Jessica Jones. He was running the bar, you may remember, across the street from her apartment, I think. Now he's got his own show. The characters themselves are running headlong into the recently announced Defenders series, which we knew this was coming, but we didn't know it was going to be a series until a week ago. But Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Daredevil, and Jessica Jones are all going to team up, as Marvel characters tend to do, in a Defenders series. But that's not going to be for a little while. For right now, we're going to talk about Luke Cage. So what do we think of Luke Cage?
I think it's one of the coolest ones. They are all cool, but for some reason, this one takes it to a different level. It has an intriguing set of villains that you're right there with them as they're plotting. Mm-hmm. And it spends a lot of time on their dialogue and a lot of time on their motivation. Mm-hmm. Not to say that Luke Cage isn't an interesting hero, too. He's very reluctant, and there's a lot of things that spur him into action, but he's a reluctant hero and that he has these powers and he wants to lie low at the start of this series. But I don't know, I feel like it's another hit by Netflix, but it also doesn't try to be bigger than it is either. I think it's like these street level stories, mm-hmm. The street level heroes. It's a nice tightly packed story, but this one is almost like setting up a totally different vibe among the characters in that they have personal relationships and mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. like the villains and the place of Harlem mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm. So it's great because it's telling yet another story in the same place, but now it's telling it in a different way and emphasizing different aspects of it.
I would agree. I think one of the difficulties I had with Jessica Jones was that the plot seems so implausible even within its own internal logic by the end. I felt like the plot was getting so stretched thin that they were kind of grasping at things to fill in. But here I feel like there's so much because so many of the villains I could sympathize with because they were very developed. They all had backstories and they all interplayed in this interconnected web of the people of Harlem and the history of Harlem. And so there wasn't just one antagonist. There were many. And sometimes you didn't know if you thought of someone as a villain or a hero because you could see things from both sides. And I think that depth of character is what really compelled me about this show, is that even after seeing the whole 13-episode season, I couldn't necessarily pick out this person as good or bad or black or white, because you get to see through flashback and through the history of, like, for one of the characters, Cottonmouth, you get to see flashbacks into when he was young and the situations, the terrible situations he kind of had to endure growing up. So you do feel this deep connection or empathy for these different characters. And the way that the story is set up with Luke Cage as kind of this fugitive who's laying low as a guy who sweeps at a barber shop in the middle of Harlem. And then the world opens up and seeing that, oh, this is a superhuman, supernatural world, but it doesn't have that flash, which I think is a good thing, like you were mm-hmm. saying, Tony.
Well, yeah, and like the places like the barbershop, Pop's Barbershop, mm-hmm. and the Paradise Club, too. So the Paradise Club is kind of, I think, where the initial scene is set, but they introduce such awesome characters. One of the heroes, Misty Knight, is an undercover cop there, mm-hmm. and she orders a drink from Luke Cage, who's a stand-in bartender at the time, and it shows kind of this vibrant heart of what's going on, and that mm-hmm. there's art and there's people, but there's also crime, you know, yeah. and it's founded on money that was taken from a public fund, you know. So I love how the villains kind of, their crime is a white-collar crime of... Mm-hmm. We didn't know maybe they were going to pay the money back or something. Like, sure, there's killing and horrible things in their past and in their family, but they're trying to carry on a legacy that's something more than just crime. They have a lot of dignity to what their goals are.
And the show is such a product of the time period we're in right now, where the show just really shows the difficulties and the problems that are facing Black people in the United States right now, and like police brutality and systemic oppression mm-hmm. and poverty and all these things that are just entrenched in so many of our communities really come to the forefront here. And I think mm-hmm. this TV show is dealing with those issues in a way that superhero shows usually in the mm-hmm. past would not do. It's grounded in the things that we're facing now.
As opposed to space aliens coming from another planet yeah. or some sort of mega villain who is only about evil and completely one-dimensional.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like the supernatural powers or the superhuman powers are a reaction to real-life things that we're facing rather than the other way around. Mm-hmm. So it definitely seems much more on a human level.
Yeah. Well, I want to change the subject to the art production on this show. I think is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. The set design, mm-hmm. the music, the acting as well.
Yes.
As a part of that is, I think it's way better than any of the other series. Mm-hmm. It's way mm-hmm. better than Daredevil, way better than Jessica Jones.
Yes.
I think I could just stare at images from this mm-hmm. show because Pop's Barbershop was this beautiful back, again, like your Paper Girls book. It was like a beautiful blue background and everyone was wearing blue or straw colored mm-hmm. hats or mm-hmm. something like that. It was, and then the Paradise Club is a strange little like blaxploitation minute where like they go to the club and they put on a hip hop band and Cottonmouth will just sit and watch mm-hmm. and smile. Mm-hmm. And it's straight out of these movies from the 70s mm-hmm. where it's like they're featuring the music in that mm-hmm. moment. That's yep. the point mm-hmm. of this part of the mm-hmm. show. And they'll have these, it's seemingly in every episode, where they'll just say, well, let's slow down the episode. Let's feature some costuming. Let's feature some musical yeah. acts. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pick up with the story as we go. And I find yeah. that it's a lot of fun to watch. Yeah. As opposed to Jessica Jones, which had a beautiful high concept. But I didn't find it fun to watch.
No.
This is fun to watch.
This is fun to watch. Jessica Jones had this like bleak tone, mm-hmm. but it was bleak all the way across the board. And there didn't seem to be differentiation between different sets. But where we were, you know, at Pops versus mm-hmm. where we're with Misty in the police station versus in the Paradise Club, each setting has its own feel, its own vibe, its own music, mm-hmm. and it's very different. It ties the whole thing together mm-hmm. really well.
And it's amazing that they can tell such a story where also as the plot evolves, these sets evolve. Changing the lighting just alone can totally, mm-hmm. totally dramatically change Paradise Club, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and it changes the range of tones that that place can evoke when you have police or something standing in there, you know, so.
And the dialogue has some really snappy lines in it, too, yeah. a lot mm-hmm. relating to literature or books that are just like these quips that come at you really quickly that I think is a type of like levity.
Yeah, I've been down on these Marvel shows. I've been down on Daredevil. I've been down on Jessica Jones. I've been down on the ABC shows. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I watched a couple of those. That show's a little goofy. It's a little lighter in tone. It's nothing like the darker, more serious Netflix shows. And then this one, like, really toes a line between being dark but still funny, mm-hmm. being serious but still there's enough action to keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. It's very carefully put together, I think, yeah. and it really excels. It really shows.
And I think it's, even though Netflix shows usually have more ability to be more narrowly tailored because it's not on broadcast television, sure. I think that this is very widely accessible. Mm-hmm. For people who don't necessarily like Marvel or those type of TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not really filled with costumed superheroes mm-hmm. or anything that's like too flashy or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. You could probably, if this was a broadcast television show, a lot of people might be duped into watching it and not knowing they were watching a superhero show for a
yeah.
while.
Yeah. In the beginning, especially, Luke Cage's powers are really downplayed. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't want to demonstrate anything. But then it turns around and he does something totally super, totally, you know, he brings down the Fort Knox, the mm-hmm. building, in a great fight sequence that was set to Bring the Ruckus by Wu-Tang Clan. That was amazing. That actually got me into it. I'm like, I don't know if I watch this show. And my roommate is like, there's a fight scene choreographed to Bring the Ruckus. I'm like, all right, I'm in. Moments like that just jump out of the episode. And, like, I want to watch the third episode again. I don't want to move on to the fourth because a lot of good stuff happened in it. Yeah. So, I don't know. For me personally, listeners to the podcast might know that I've been kind of down on these Marvel shows, these Netflix shows. I watched half of Jessica Jones. I didn't watch any of Stranger Things. I've only watched 3 episodes of Luke Cage. But it's definitely the one I'm most excited mm-hmm. about continuing and most excited about. I might actually finish this one, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to it. There's so much depth. There's so many different angles that it plays between, you know, what is nobility and what is corrupt. what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong, and just...
And what counts as collateral damage versus just regular damage, I think. And I think the next episodes you have upcoming, like the 4, 5, 6 ones are rare, like really was like, oh, it's gelling, it's coming together. So those are good ones.
All right, so that's Luke Cage. It's on Netflix now. If you haven't seen it already, go out and watch it. If you haven't seen the other Marvel shows, it'd be good to watch those. But, you know, you don't have to. You can jump right into this one, I think. He shows up in Jessica Jones, but the story of Luke Cage is self-contained, that you can just watch this series. You don't need to watch every single Daredevil episode or Jessica Jones episode to get caught up. You can jump right into this one. And if you like this one, then you can go back and watch the first ones. So that's it for the Pint and Click podcast. We'll see you next time.